My name is Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom to four kids, ages 2 through 9, and we are learning how to make joy normal.
My name is Bonnie Landry, and I want to welcome you to season 2 of our podcast, Make Joy Normal. We want to thank everybody for their support and how much you've shared this podcast with your friends and those who you think it would be helpful for. I am a wife, I'm a mom, I'm a grandma. I've been homeschooling for 30 years. My kids are ages 14 to 33. I only have one at home now. I'm a speaker, a writer, a blogger, and I guess we're podcasters now, Elizabeth. And I'm an advocate of joy. So welcome to our podcast. Welcome everybody to this evening's podcast. We're really excited for our guest today. I have a couple of announcements first. First of all, I'm supposed to, as a podcaster, they tell me, the podcast world people, say, ask people to review your podcast, ask people to give it a like or whatever, because that helps spread the word that you're trying to spread. And what we're trying to spread here is making joy normal. So the more you do that, the more you put out reviews and likes whatever on our podcast, the more this will come up on the top of people's feed and they will get to share in all the joy with us. So I just want to encourage you to do that. Also, I have another podcast. Many of our listeners will already know this. I have another podcast for Catholic moms called Martha Martha, where I just deliver, 5 or 10 minutes of encouragement in the mornings. I'm going to start doing some little bit longer podcasts off of that one, because a few things have come up that I would like to address in a larger way. So I'm not quite sure how this is all going to look, but I do have one scheduled for next week. So I'll continue doing the morning podcast. But the next week's podcast, I'm interviewing a priest friend of ours. His name is Father Harrison. And if you're not Catholic, you're welcome to join us too. He's going to be talking about a question I've had. What is the parents' role in the education of their children, right? We are considered to be, by the church, the primary educators of our children. So what does that mean? And what maybe does that look like? So Father Harrison is a very dear friend of ours. He's also a podcaster at Clerically Speaking, if anyone's familiar with that podcast. So join us next week. We're interviewing Wednesday, so it should be out, a couple of days after that, and I'll keep people posted on by Instagram and Facebook. So I want to welcome Kylia McIlvaine, who does have a mouthful of a name. We have to go over that. How often is that mispronounced, right?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, I bet. So welcome so much, Kylia. We're so glad you're here. I came across Kylia via Instagram because she was very open about mental illness and things going on in her life and homeschooling. And I had a question come up. Somebody submitted a question saying, if I suffer from depression, should I homeschool? Can I homeschool? How can I manage that? Well, I don't have a reference point for that myself. My eldest daughter still suffers from depression, but quite severely for a number of years. So I have the mom's perspective, but not the mom homeschooling perspective. And I thought it was a really, really good question. So what I know about Kylia is that she has some children. She homeschools. She has a book called The Kids Book. Talking to kids about depression, kids book about depression. And on her Instagram account, very open about her own struggles and sharing what she does to move past that. And what a gift. I've clicked on a couple of your videos and whatnot. It's really, really lovely, because it's such an important question. I almost don't know. I don't think I know a single family who has not been touched in some way by anxiety, depression, or any other form of mental illness that, we just have to go there. And it's affected my family a lot, So nice. I think we just have to go here. So it's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. So she is a writer, a musician, a knitter, and a lover of all things Middle Earth, says Amazon. Yeah, we're sisters. And she lives in Washington State. So I was just hoping you could tell us a little bit first about your family.
Goodness. Well, my husband and I are actually the oldest in our families. We didn't know each other growing up, but I was the oldest of 4. He's the oldest of 7. We both grew up in the same homeschooling community, him in Portland and I in Vancouver. So we're both veteran homeschoolers.
Wow.
With our own experiences, as well as growing up in 2 different denominations before we converted to Orthodoxy. And so we decided back when our oldest was a baby, we're like, well, I think we want to homeschool. What does this look like for us? And this was before I was diagnosed with anything. Some of the baggage that we had kind of brought in from some of our own homeschooling experiences, as well as some of the wonderful things that came out of that. So we're like, okay, well, what does this look like for us? Well, after I got diagnosed with depression, then eventually with bipolar 2 disorder, actually, it was a lot, but it also explained a lot and helped us to kind of shift our vision and understand like what boundaries and care looks like for our family and how to stay open. So that's kind of where we're at. We've been homeschooling for about 9 years. My oldest is 4 and 3. He's like 7th, 8th grade. Okay. He is on the spectrum. I have another daughter with ADD. And so we have a myriad of challenges, but very, very thankful to be on this journey. And I'm not going it alone, which I also
yeah, exactly. That's how we do it, so that's a key. Are you in the Seattle area?
I'm not. Well, I'm actually down on the south end or south.
Okay, closer to Vancouver.
Very, yeah. I'm very close to Portland. So
okay, nice, beautiful area. A lot like here, actually.
Quite, yeah.
Yeah, very green, lovely. Okay, well, that's wonderful. And so, sorry, your kids' ages again, just to run that past me?
Let's see here.
I was caught up in the story.
No. Owen is 12, he'll be 13 in June. Nice. Imogen is 11, and then have 8, almost 9, and then 7. So oldest is a boy and then 3 girls.
Oh, nice. Okay, that's lovely. Okay, yeah. Do you want to take away the next question?
Yeah. You kind of answered this a little bit, but just maybe a little bit more specifically, how long have you been homeschooling?
For about 9 years.
Okay. So wow. The kids have never been to school then, we presume. Yeah. Okay. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah.
So still going strong.
I know.
For real. Some people are like, wow, like 9 years. Like, what is it? I was like, well, they're like, that's got to be really like difficult. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's not easy, but it's kind of the only way to let it do it. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it. It's, you know, being that you're both homeschooled, the mystery is gone, right?
Indeed.
You know, which is great. You know, I feel that for my kids, my 3 daughters who are married and 2 of them are homeschooling, and they're, you know, they're finding their own way. They have to, of course they have to, but it's not like I'm homeschooling, you know, they're not grappling with that. Right. Yeah. Elizabeth's husband also homeschooled. Yeah. So that definitely makes it easier.
Awesome.
Well, for him anyway.
Oh yeah.
So at what point in your homeschooling journey were you diagnosed, or was it before homeschooling started?
I was diagnosed about 6 years ago.
Okay.
It wasn't too long after my youngest was born. She was probably about a year, year and a half.
Okay.
And I kind of suffered just a complete breakdown, actually. We were, at the time, we were going to an evangelical church in Portland, both serving as music leaders in the church. And we were on our way there, and I don't know what was the catalyst for it. It must have been God.
Yeah.
But I just came apart, and he stopped the car at Laurelhurst Park. This is a beautiful old park on the east side of Portland. And just we walked around for about 3 hours. There was a Midsummer Night's Dream like being performed out on the lawn. It was so like so bizarre, but I just remember falling apart in front of my husband and saying, like, I can't do this anymore. I feel like I'm like not good as a mother and as a wife and as a human being. And it would be so much more beneficial if I just weren't here anymore. Like, I just don't want to be alive anymore. I don't understand why I feel like I'm suffering so much. Yeah.
And you have 4 very small kids at this point, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I had not been screened for postpartum depression. I had not been, I just, I don't think I even understood what I was feeling. Like, I just, it wasn't as if I was completely isolated, but it was just, I was like, here I was educating four very small children. They were all very close together in age. And for as incredibly supportive as my husband was in the community, it, depression doesn't always just, you know, crop up only when you're isolated. It's sometimes there's just nothing's really triggering, you know, it's just, it's there. And so it's, finally it's getting diagnosed with that was kind of that, that catalyst for seeking treatment, understanding what my brain and my body were actually going through. And that made a difference because, you know, thankfully I fell apart in front of somebody who just listened and was completely supportive. He's like, let's get you help. And there was no judgment, there was no fear. And I think that it was just because I had nothing else, you know, there was no shame or anything involved in that, which can quite possibly keep, you know, many people, especially I think when you're in the position of a mother and a home educator to be like, my brain is falling apart and I don't know what to do. Like, it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means you need help. And, you know, it's a sickness and you need help when you're sick.
We always talked to our oldest daughter that we always talked about this in the vein of, you know, if you had diabetes, you know, you would, because for a long time for her it was really, I asked her if I could share some of her story while we were talking with you, but we, you know, this is prior to being a mom, right? She's a fairly new mom, but when she was, you know, 17 18 19, she didn't want to tell her friends, she didn't want to, you know, it was so hard because she didn't want anyone to know except me. That was, she didn't even want her siblings to know, right? And, you know, this is a really tough place to be. And so that was the framework we were, you know, if you had diabetes, you would tell your friends, they can pray for you, they can support you, they can understand why you say no to things. You know, the, you know, there's so many reasons why you would want them to know, right? And that was a big breakthrough to actually be public about it.
Absolutely. And it, I feel like my children have several advantages growing up the generation they do, because mine was on the cusp of people even being okay talking about any of that. And like the family culture that I grew up in, my mom was really mentally ill and dealt with a lot of health issues on top of which, and I received an excellent education, but it also came with a lot of other stuff. And I think a part of that was that there was no language cultivated around openness and connection and vulnerability. Like, you just didn't talk about that. So I think that even as an adult, it was really hard for me to be conscious and check in with myself or even identify what I was feeling and what I was going through. And it took, you know, took me falling apart and outside sources kind of say, hey, it's okay, I think this is what you're going through, let's get you help, we'll do whatever it takes kind of thing. And I think that in contrast, helping and cultivating that kind of language in our home, like my children are like, oh, mom's going to her psychiatrist, she talks to her therapist, these are the meds that she's taking. And it's a very normal part of just taking care of ourselves. And so they don't know the difference.
Thank God you lived in a community where you had people in your life to do that, right? Because I think that that makes such a difference to normalize behavior. Like, when I always talk, I talk a lot about this in homeschool world, like, have a community, because your kids are, it'll help you know your kids are normal or not. Right. Yes. And so another mom is like, this is actually not okay. You know, so we, you know, we need those voices in our life. Right. And, you know, so thank God for that.
I agree. Yeah. It's, I think that that's one of the biggest differences in, the way that we choose to educate at home in our family is, growing up, like, the only thing that we had schooling and community was like our science class, which was kind of like a co-op situation.
Right.
Wonderful. But my mom really homeschooled us in isolation.
Right.
And so even though our church that we went to, most of the kids were homeschoolers there, that kind of isolation really affected all of us, and didn't give us the community that we needed, I think.
And you, was that maybe because of her own illness she was struggling with?
I think so too. Yeah, I do. And I feel like homeschool culture was back then. I think that my parents and a lot of parents, it was different. It was new. It was kind of like they were pioneers, but there just are not the resources, I think, then that there were today. You know, we have the option of online connection as well, and conferences, and a plethora of, you know, speakers and people who've been down the road.
Yeah, exactly. And we also found, like, early on, so we've been homeschooling for 30 years, so we've kind of spanned that, right? So what we found is that our kids, most of the families that we knew, not all, but the vast majority, were homeschooling as a reaction, right? And they were keeping their kids safe away from the culture. And that was a big, big thing. I wasn't homeschooling for that reason. I just wanted to have, I thought it would be fun. I thought it'd be fun to just educate my own kids, you know? And so I was just coming in, and it took me a while to figure out what was, I was also a new Christian. It took me a while to kind of figure out there's something weird going on, right? You know, right. And I don't know if your husband was raised that way, Elizabeth, but you know, that idea that, oh, your husband too, Kylia? Okay. It's sort of like in the bounds of safety.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was definitely like a reaction to the culture. So I think that their response was like, okay, well, we're going to shelter you from the world because we don't need to influence you. But I think that a lot of that motivation was fear, instead of operating from a place of like safety and a haven so that you can engage the world, you know, in a healthy way.
Yeah.
So, I feel like we had to come to grips with that too. We're like, are we homeschooling because we're afraid, or are we homeschooling because we want to cultivate relationship in our family and equip our children to be world changers and to love people well? Like, if they can love God and love people well, I feel like we've really done work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Do you want to take the next one, Elizabeth?
Yeah. Well, before we move on, one thing that I thought about when you were kind of sharing your story was, you know, because I suffer from debilitating anxiety, which is kind of on that same spectrum of mental illness. And I think what I've realized is once I knew I needed help, the hardest part was actually finding a good therapist to help. It almost kind of seems like it's like a diamond in the rough, trying to find somebody that can really truly help. Because I had a therapist that I went to when I first moved here to Michigan, and I kid you not, the third session in, I almost walked out. And this poor woman is actually blind. And I was so angry at her. I almost got up and just quietly left, because what she was doing was actually making it worse. You know, and that's not
what
you
want. Willing to shop around, right? You got to shop around.
And when you feel so desperate to get that help and you can't find it quick enough, it almost makes everything just so much worse.
It does, because you're operating from a place of like utter desperation and need. And you're like, it's almost like you don't even have any bandwidth, because it requires a lot of vulnerability for you to just even step out. I hope my dog doesn't bark.
we won't be mad. Kids and dogs, it's fine.
See, there you go. Come here. His name is Fergus. He is a Scottish Terrier. And come on. Oh, there you go. Okay. Yes, I know, you're so jealous for attention. So it's really exhausting. And then when you find out they're not a good fit, you're like, well, should I just stick with them because I have somebody? Or it's no. And it is a part of advocating for yourself. And those are some muscles that you have to develop and flex. And that is not
gosh.
And any good therapist should be able to take somebody saying, this isn't a good fit for me. Right. Because they've got to know, you know, they've got to know. Right. That's
they really do.
Yeah. So what do you find dealing with mental illness? What do you find the biggest challenge to homeschooling?
Oh my goodness. I think one of them would be triggers, especially mental and emotional triggers, because of my own upbringing. Again, I was taught some really wonderful skills, but was also taught a lot of unhealthy behavior. So it's learning I guess it's unlearning some of those behaviors that are kind of like my, you know, it's just ingrained behavior, and not just unlearning, but choosing to set healthier rhythms and habits. And not taking my children's own like resistance or emotional responses personally, which I didn't grow up that way. It was like everything was an affront to the way, you know, I grew up, without, you know, bashing my mom. I think she did the best she could. Not wanting to just throw the baby out with the bathwater, recognizing that there is value in that, and just I mean, the only way I can recognize my triggers and grow from that is by, you know,
experiencing my
exactly.
Yeah.
So it's almost like reparenting myself, but also allowing, just allowing community and surrounding myself with healthy people. I think that learning how to cultivate community has been one of the biggest challenges, but necessary challenges.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. And especially like, you know, I think that's probably the biggest thing.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, good heavens. As long as I'm petting him, I don't think he's going to bark.
Okay. No, it's not a problem. Don't worry about it. We'll put the mic. You just put him near the mic. Let him bark. You want to take the next one?
Yeah. So do you have three keys to managing, you know, homeschooling life successfully?
Success is not linear.
Yes.
That's what I would say first. I would say that I actually wrote them down, so pardon me.
Oh, that's good.
I think that because I also deal with several health issues that can actually be pretty debilitating. So I have the mental aspect and then the physical aspect, which means I can't do what some other moms do, and that's okay. Recognizing my limitations. But the first one would be having a plan and a rhythm, simple, that works, but also is flexible. Yeah. And know that my needs, it's okay to meet my needs, and for those needs to change over time, and for my children's needs to move and shift over time. And then that doesn't mean that things are necessarily failing or working, it just means it needs to change. So honestly, having simple rhythms as far as how does the home get clean and taken care of? What does it look like to have work, you know, or like our time protected, our rest? Like what does our family rhythm look like? How do we deal with conflict? Those kinds of things. What do I do when I'm having a mast cell flare up and my body physically cannot get up? What does that look like? Does it mean just snuggling up in bed and listening to a podcast? Yeah, it does. Okay. And recognizing that those things are valuable too. And that ultimately it is my job to give them a good education, but more than that, it is my job to love them well, and you know, the way that Christ has loved us. Mm-hmm. So that would be my first one.
Okay, no, that's good.
Thank you. The next one would be, again, as we talked before, about cultivating community and connection within the home education community, and find the things and the people that encourage you and speak to you. Find resources. You know, I'm not going to go out and look for things of why homeschooling shouldn't work in this environment kind of thing. I'm going to look for the people who encourage me. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest encouragement to me ever has been Sally Clarkson.
Yes,
she's lovely. Yeah.
Yes,
I found her back when she had this little blog, and didn't have that many books out. Oh, good heavens! And she just, there was something about her, and I almost felt like she was countercultural to maybe some of the more traditional kind of like hardline voices in the parenting and home education community. Mm-hmm. She taught parenting and home education from a place of connection and love and inspiration, and what a story formed family and life looks like. And how to pursue Christ in relationship with your kids. And I was like, this is what I feel like I'm called to. And this is what I want. So her voice is so full of love,
right?
So full of love.
Yeah.
And so I'm so thankful that the whole Clarkson family is doing what they're doing. It's just been super encouraging. And, you know, books, podcasts, all of that, anything. So that, and I would say my third one would be to seek peace and healing from your entire being so that you can operate from a place of humility, connection, and courage. And I would say that us converting to Orthodoxy has been really healing for us, even though we both grew up in the Protestant church. I think that, you know, one of the big things that Orthodoxy teaches is that the church is a hospital, and this is a place to receive healing from everything, and for us to be more fully human. And so getting to discover these things as an adult, that wow, these things are meant for our benefit and for our good, that medication's okay to take. Yeah. That, you know, even my, you know, our priest at our parish is just like, he's great. Before I go for confession, he's like, hey, how are your meds going? Are you taking your meds? Because he understands that that's important.
Yeah.
In giving me spiritual counsel. I have a great counselor. it's good. It's really, really good.
So, and also just when, you know, in the, like in Catholicism, like Orthodoxy, that our suffering is meaningful.
Suffering,
right? And so, you know, our suffering has value. It's meaningful. It's united with Christ. You know, so that all of that comes into it too, right? That's a huge component, and I know that people have converted simply for that reason, right? That suddenly suffering makes sense, right? You know, and you've suffered. You've done a lot of suffering. Yeah. Was there anything else on your list? Because I had a question to ask you about that. Something on your list.
Goodness, you know what? I'm about to put you downstairs. Yes.
Okay, he's going to get a credit in our podcast.
Yeah, he totally is. Yeah.
Let's see. I think that that's it. Those are my three main points.
Okay, so the question that came up for me as you were listing those things, especially your first point, about, you know, being aware of what's going on around you and what your needs are and what your children's needs are. Do you plan regular time to assess that?
Yes, I do. I really do. I'll do a, we usually have three terms in our school year. Right. I usually do, like, as far as home rhythms and school rhythms, I usually evaluate at the beginning of the end of the term, and it'll kind of tell me, okay, like what worked, what didn't work, what am I getting burned out on, what do I need to drop, what do I need to pick up again, is there anything that I really need to work on, and yeah, I usually do it at the beginning of the school year, and then I try to check in once a week. Once a week, usually on Sunday or Saturday night, best to just kind of like align myself so that we can go into the week.
Yeah. Well, I've shared this several times on the podcast that every summer I would go through an assessment process. And I think that was vital. To me, every school year was a clean slate, and we had to assess what was going to go into that, as opposed to just assuming we're going to do something because we did it last year. But for in your situation, you know, that would have to be more frequent for sure, right? And I'm sure, Elizabeth, too, with you, you know, sharing anxiety, that assessment is a huge part of moving forward and not feeling like you're losing it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And I find that, you know, I'm setting myself up for success when I choose to plan things and be organized. I mean, there is such a thing as over planning, which I can do. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's like running a marathon. I think I'm sprinting until like 3 months into the school year, and I'm like, I'm burnt out and I can't do anything anymore.
Yeah.
So it's kind of setting yourself up for that long term, but it still requires you to fuel yourself and check in and see where you need to change, how you need to pace yourself. Mm-hmm. This is your prime opportunity to just get pet.
Do you want to take the next one, Elizabeth?
Yeah. So what would your advice be on how we can support moms who struggle with depression?
Oh, man.
Or any other challenge like that, right?
Yeah.
I think that one of the biggest barriers to even recognizing that in someone else is isolation, and which is far more tricky now with COVID.
Right.
And so it really takes a lot of intention on the part of anybody to reach out and choose to connect with somebody and be a somebody who's not necessarily going out there to just like, I'm going to seek it out so that I can fix someone. But often I think the biggest gift that we can give somebody who's struggling is a gift of our presence, mm-hmm. and just being a gentle ear and being present and being open and being honestly okay with talking about uncomfortable things. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to hide it when we don't see people very often. It's a lot easier when we are polite and we kind of skim over the, oh, how are you doing? Oh my gosh, you know, life is crazy right now. It's very easy to get caught up in the pleasantries, and it's much more intentional but uncomfortable to mm-hmm. wade through those kinds of things. And we can't be that to everybody, but I think that that truly makes a difference, you know, being somebody safe that somebody can go to
to reach out.
So if I could ask, what advice could you give, because I know I would love to be that ear for people, right? My problem is I am not good at, I think, you know, I know that they don't always need feedback, but you know, that ear, but I feel like I'm always giving off this vibe of, okay, I don't know how to handle this. And right. I don't want that, you know?
Yeah.
So how could we, as, you know, good friends and listeners, kind of really give our attention and make sure they feel that we genuinely are there, if that makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I think that, those are great questions. I think that off the top of my head, I think that, I don't know if you guys have studied the Enneagram at all, but I am a 2, which is known as like the helper. But one of the biggest aspects of being a helper is respecting the boundaries of the people around you, but in a way, like, not everybody needs my help, but this is how I can be helpful. So saying, hey, I'm noticing this, or hey, I just want to let you know, like, this is me. This is what I suffer from. And I just want to let you know I'm here. Like, if you need somebody to talk to or listen to, I'm like, I don't have all the best answers. I don't know everything there is to know. Everybody's experience is unique. But like, hey, if you need help finding resources, whatever, just let me know. Please let me know how I can help. And not everybody can tell you the kind of help that they need, but even just giving somebody permission to say, I'm here. If you have a need, please let me know and I'll help out, you know? And if I'm not the best person, let me direct you to somebody who might be. you know, because we're not meant to meet the needs of everybody, but we can love. And I think that's a good way to, oh gosh, hang on. I'm just going
to- No problem.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you find environment makes a big difference? Like, for me, it does. You know, just in terms of how I, you know, if I feel good or not good, it's just my environment is really important to me.
Absolutely. I mean, let me catch my breath. We lived almost 10 years. We were only intending on living in this little duplex about 1 year, but it's where we eventually had all of our children. And it was like 800 square feet. 2 bedrooms, 1 bathroom, teeny, teeny little place. And we called it the Hobbit Hole. And so we homeschooled, we did life there. And we called it the Hobbit Hole because it was so teeny, but so cozy. And we knew that no matter where we lived, like, we wanted to cultivate a place where we would want to be. And we feel super privileged that we're in this sweet little 1940s cottage, which we do have more space in, but we've always, even before we had children, we're like, Lord, like, wherever we're at, whatever home we're in, whatever environment, whatever resources you've given us, like, we want our home to be a place of peace and safety and joy and beauty. And that really, like, surrounding yourselves with lovely things, if you can, the things that bring you joy and happiness, do it. You know,
lots of books.
That's just like half of them. Maybe.
Yeah, that's awesome.
There are books everywhere, which is important to us.
Have you watched the little video that Brené Brown has on empathy?
Oh yes.
Oh, isn't that fantastic? And have you seen that, Elizabeth?
No, I haven't even
heard of it. It's like 4 or 5 minutes long.
Uh-huh.
I'll put it in the show notes. It's so beautiful. When you just said you don't be willing to enter in, and she just talks about what empathy is. And it's funny and it's lighthearted, but it just hits you in your heart, you know? But it's a really, really sweet and beautiful, video that she's done. And so, yeah, you'll pop it in the show notes so you can see it there when we put this together. It's so good.
Is it good for kids to see?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's one, she has another little video. Oh, about blamers. And there's like, you know, she says damn it or something like that. But that's, you know, that's as bad as it gets. But she talks about how she's naturally a blamer, and then, you know, sort of goes on to explain sort of how blamers operate, right? Which is also really good. Like, it's a fantastic little video. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I just want to make sure, I want to pick your brain, so to speak. Did you deal with criticism or scrutiny, right? Because homeschooling, you could deal with so much of that. Now, you grew up, you were homeschooled, and your family was all good with it and all that, obviously. But was there scrutiny and criticism because you're diagnosed, you're moving forward anyways, you know, what was that like? Or did you experience any of that?
Haven't experienced it a whole lot. I think that people are a little like, wait, you're homeschooling, but you're mentally ill. Like, is that possible? And I'm like, well, for me, it is. That may not actually be a viable option for somebody else who is dealing with depression. And I think that, as with all things, the older I get, the more I realize how flexible that I need to be and how open to change. And if those needs change, that's okay. We'll cross that bridge if we get there, but that it is possible. From my perspective, it is possible, but it's possible because I am getting taken care of mentally and physically and spiritually, and it requires a lot of moving parts. And yeah, like, it takes some work. It's made a little bit easier by having a supportive community. I know that it would be harder if I didn't, and not everybody has that. So I think that's probably why community is so important. One of the many reasons.
Yeah. Sure. You know, something just popped into my brain when you said that. The question that was actually originally submitted to us that made me reach out to you was, you know, can I homeschool if I suffer from depression, and should I homeschool? Right. And that to me has to be a very much a point of discernment. But would you have any thoughts on that? Like, what might be some markers that maybe this isn't the best choice for you, or how can you manage the idea that, okay, maybe I shouldn't be homeschooling? What are the things you should be looking for or at in that question?
Gosh, I would say that the physical and mental health aspect comes first. So oftentimes when we begin on our mental health journey, it is a lot of tough work. I mean, it's still tough work, but when you're not in the habit of taking care of your brain as well as your body, it can be all consuming in some aspects. So I would say that, well, if you don't have bandwidth for educating at home for that season, yeah, maybe it isn't the best fit. I would say that, you know, reevaluate. Like, it's always okay to change your mind.
Yeah.
It's okay to, you know, say, where am I at mentally? Is this something that would be beneficial for me, but also for the family? Because ultimately, like, you know, if we are taking care of ourselves, then we can operate from a place of health and a place of rest. And that goes for anything in life, not just mental health, but I think it's that much more important. Mm-hmm. So I think that if we have the support, especially in relation to counseling and, you know, whatever else that is we're going through, I think that does change our capacity. Like, because if you don't have the capacity for it, it's just not, I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be beneficial for anybody.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, just a note about counseling that I think is, you know, worth saying is that, you know, many times, often, you know, this crops up when you have a young family, right? I mean, that is the age range where we see anxiety, depression, you know, that's, you know, absolutely when we sort of 18 to 25 often, you know, is kind of an age where we see these things crop up. And, you know, what if you can't afford it, right? What if you can't afford counseling, right? And I mean, there are some affordable things out there, but you maybe, you know, maybe you're not going to have access to the best counselors. And, you know, personally, I mean, we've lived our life, you know, as debt-free as possible, you know, and that's really important to us because that's just another stressor. However, I would recommend to any young person, if you had to borrow money to get therapy, that's what you do. Right.
Sure.
That, more than a car, more than a house, more than anything, that's money needs to be put into your mental health because you can't move forward. Right. If you don't, you know, put money into that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. I think also you could seek help at your church. I know if spiritual direction actually is, I think for those, maybe not the extreme cases, but those that are just, you know, kind of suffering generalized anxiety, or I don't know if generalized depression is a thing. Forgive me if I'm getting things wrong, but, you know, for kind of more of the
there
simpler
are degrees
cases.
Of, yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. And so I think spiritual direction is helpful because that plays into anxiety and, you know, other mental illnesses as well, is that spiritual aspect component. And so if you really can't afford a therapist, but have a great priest, or even there's some counseling through parishes that aren't, you know, just the priest that should be available
or whatever. Yeah. Have you ever come across the book Beyond Blue?
No.
Okay, so this was a book that I'm just going to mention it. I have not read it. Okay, so I'm just mentioning it because it was a book for my daughter that was pretty profound. It was really, really an open door because we had no idea what we were dealing with.
Yeah.
Right. And when she was diagnosed, it was like, what? You know, it was so, and it was such a learning curve for all of us. You know, it was very hard, some hard years. And so when she was probably in her early 20s, she found this book called Beyond Blue, which is about depression and, you know, and the management of it. And she happened to say, I'll put it in the show notes. She happened to say that it was on several occasions that it was just a really helpful, beautiful book for her. And one of the ideas, I believe it was that book that it came out of, she said, you know, every time you do something good for yourself, it's like putting a penny in a jar, right? And so if you get up and brush your teeth, you know, yay, that's a score for that day, you know, and, you know, you have a juice box before you get out of bed so that you can, you know, maybe stumble to the bathroom or whatever, you wash your face, you know, you do whatever it is you do, all those little tiny things you do for your own wellness, you put a penny in a jar. And she said, one day the jar is full, right? And you don't even realize, you know, everything feels like such an effort, but then one day you're filling your own tank. You're filling your own tank, and other people can do that for you, but you know, you have to do it for yourself as well, you know? And I don't know why, I mean, I don't know if this is really common maybe in your experience, but like, she also has a lot of physical health issues, right? And, you know, I mean, your brain is part of your body, so, you know, it seems to me like, okay, you know, those things are going to go part and parcel with, you know, you're going to have other issues if you have, you know, sort of fundamental brain issues and other body issues, that probably is pairs up often.
Yes, quite often,
right? I need to love you. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just was wondering, as a parent, you know, I mean, there hundreds of parents listening to this. Are there signs that we can look for in our children to kind of help, I guess, get to the treatment and help be like before it's too late? Yeah. If I could ask that.
Yeah. Instead of getting smacked in the head, like we were, like, what do you, sure. What do you mean?
Yeah.
What is depression? Yeah. I don't even know. Yeah. That's a great question.
You know,
yeah.
Cause I kind of think what's the difference between maybe truly heading towards, you know, that downward spiral of mental illness and what's, you know, just those teenage blues or just, you know, a funky day, you know,
yeah,
are there absolutely signs?
Well, I have my book with me.
Yeah. That was the next question I was going to ask. So maybe these we can just combine. Tell us about your book. And yeah.
Okay.
And
I feel like a lot of that is actually in the book that I talk about. Not that I have spent years researching it. It's mostly telling my own story. Mm-hmm. And saying, this is what it can look like, and asking some prompting questions. I have two of my children who deal with massive anxiety. And so to the point where we've needed to give them occupational therapy, sure. and just therapy in general, which has helped a lot. But it's like, it's, I think it does go back to cultivating a home where it's okay to fall apart. And it's okay to have big feelings. It's okay to have a bad day. Like, how do you recognize if it's not just a bad day, but it turns into a bad week or a bad month? Or it's just this, you start seeing this. And I think that it does, it requires discernment and health on our part to recognize what's going on. Are they just angry because they're hormonal, or is this combining with something else? And sometimes you don't know, but it's better that you can just check in and say, hey, even say, I've noticed this. Hey, how are you feeling? I've noticed this about you. Do you want to talk about it? Or do you want to talk to Father Michael about it? Or, hey, I'm thinking that this might be helpful. Let's maybe pursue this together, or something like that. Just knowing that there are things at hand. And sometimes your children can hear better coming from somebody else, which is, I think, where godparents comes in, and a spiritual father and things like that. So anyway, to answer those, would you mind if I read my book? Because I feel
please
like it would be helpful to answer.
Yeah, please do. Right. So I gather it's written for fairly young children.
It is. This is typically for ages, I would say 8 to 10. But my youngest, I mean, I read it to her when she was 6, and she understands it, but we read aloud a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like it's meant to be read together. It's really good. So anyway, I'll read it. So it's for Micah and our hobbits. And here's the intro. And I said, hey, grown up, I know that delving into the subject of depression can feel like jumping off the diving board into an ocean of unknowns. I hope you know that your willingness to discuss this topic with your kid opens up a safe space and a place of compassion as you navigate these waters together. Vulnerability is the soil of connection and growth, and it's a privilege to walk with you and your kid as you discuss the topic of depression together. I hope it gives you a framework to better understand yourself or your child or a loved one in your life. So here's how it starts out. Hi, my name is Kylie.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you. It says, I have depression. Have you ever heard the word depression before? It might sound new, strange, or even scary. But it's actually something a lot of people have. And I am one of those people. Let me share my story with you. I don't remember the first time I felt my depression. I didn't even know that what I was feeling had a name. But it felt like being trapped in a fog that I couldn't see through clearly. Talking, laughing, doing fun things didn't seem to matter anymore. And color even seemed to lose its color. Songs sounded like noise. And nothing felt kind or beautiful or safe. When I felt depressed, it made me feel lonely and scared. Like if I felt too much sadness, I would get swallowed up in that fog and disappear.
For those of you who are listeners, I'm just going to say, tune into YouTube for this portion, because this is really beautiful.
Thank you. Everything made me feel like crying or being angry, sometimes for no reason at all. And sometimes I didn't feel even when I wanted to. It seemed like anything I did or said was wrong and that I wasn't ever enough. And the longer that this went on, the more I would feel useless, wrong, bad, lonely, scared, and invisible. And of course, I thought I was the only one who felt this way. But maybe I wasn't the only one. Have you ever felt this way? Like there's a wall separating you from everyone else. Like you can't be happy no matter how hard you try. Like you don't get to choose how you feel. Like everyone thinks you're fine, but you're not. That's depression. Depression is a disorder that causes the brain to feel so sad, discouraged, and lonely that it gets in the way of living everyday life. So how did I find out I had depression? Well, one day, I started to cry and I couldn't stop.
and words and tears came flooding out of me like an ocean. And I told the most important person in my life all of the things that I had been feeling inside of me, the things that they couldn't see. I told this person about the fog, the sadness, and the loneliness. And they hugged me. Oh. And they finally saw what was going on inside of me. And finally, I wasn't alone anymore. I didn't know exactly what I needed, but I knew that I needed help. So I got help, and help looked like this: meeting with a doctor, letting myself feel, talking to others, giving myself a break, trying medicine, doing things I loved again, not having to be alone. If you feel like this now or ever have before, help may look like telling someone you feel safe with, talking with a counselor, letting others take care of you, helping others in need, or trying medicine. And when I got help, something amazing started happening. Sharing about my depression took the bricks from the walls built around my heart and turned them into a bridge back to me, the real me. And I started to notice all of the color and the music and smiles around me again, and I could sit in the sunlight and laugh without pretending anymore. I was learning to see through the darkness and the fog without letting it take over. So now, when I start to feel depressed, I remember I'm not alone, tell someone how I'm feeling, do something that makes me happy, and ask for help. And here's the outro. It said, "Hey, grown up, you might have seen a lot of things in this book that mirror what you see in your own life or your child's life or that of a loved one. I can imagine you may have your own questions. The biggest one probably being, well, where do we go from here? First, you aren't alone. Let the child you know or person you love know that too. Next, ask them how they're feeling and be open to sharing your own feelings too. Share that you've noticed that things seem different with them and that you want to be there for them. After that, ask how you can help, even if they don't know exactly what they need. Do they need someone to listen? Can you help them find a doctor who can help? A group they can join? Above all, be there for them. Listen to them. Be open to how they're feeling."
Oh my gosh.
Oh, wow. I was tearing up for sure. Oh my gosh. That is beautiful.
I had no idea what to expect, right? I mean, I'd seen the cover, but that's, you know, it doesn't really give away. Oh, wow, gosh. It just, the sharing of your heart is just so vital, so important.
I was going to say, I could tell you poured your heart in that. Oh my goodness.
Know, me too.
What a gift to everybody who picks that up.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much.
That was amazing. Yeah. You know what I'd love to do? I would love to get your book and use it as a giveaway for our listeners.
Fantastic.
So if that would be great. Yeah, that would be really, really cool. So I'll figure out some way of doing that. We just did another giveaway for something, but this would be, wow, what a thing. So if I can just share, I'll find a way of sharing it on Instagram and whatnot, but it was so
fantastic.
So lovely. Wow. What was the impetus to write it? What were you?
Well, strangely enough, so my band that I had doing music at the church that I broke down on the way to, the guitarist on my band is, his name is Jelani Memory, who started the A Kids Book About company.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
We were friends, and, you know, it was after, you know, we had all kind of spread out and gone our separate ways, and he messaged me on Facebook one day. He's like, "Hey, I have this crazy idea. Would you be interested in writing a kid's book about depression?" So it wasn't on my radar at all. And he's like, "I feel like people need to hear your story." And I was like, "Well, I'm not a professional." He's like, "I don't want a professional. I think that people are most impactful by your own story and when you tell it, because nobody can tell your story the way that you can."
Yeah.
And so I was like, "All right, let's do it." So,
wow.
You know, we wrote the book in a matter of a couple of weeks, and it took off, and it's printed locally in Portland. It's a part of a whole series. It's
amazing.
Constantly coming out with new titles. There's, yeah. So that's just kind of that's kind of how it all started, and wrote it, and then it came out in October, November of 2019. Okay. And then it got picked to be on Oprah's Favorite Things list for 2020. Which was so crazy. I haven't met Oprah yet, but maybe one of these days.
Wow.
Quite a shock. Amazing. Yeah, I bet. Oh my gosh.
I love how you were able to visually kind of show what depression feels like, not with pictures, but using the words, the text. That was truly amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you. I agree. I had a hand in talking about, okay, this is kind of how we wanted to look, because we really did want the words to be the focus and not so much the illustrations for this.
Sure.
So how do you portray that in a creative way without like going, I don't know. So it's, I'm really thankful for their creative direction and just openness to, you know, going whatever way needs to happen. So they're
sure. And the lack of visuals is just so striking. It really is.
Very powerful.
It really is. So, oh yeah. And so, yeah, this is an amazing thing. Thank you so much for being with us, and also for writing that. my next question was, how can we talk to children best about depression? But I think get the book.
Right. There you go.
You know, get the book, because not only for your own children, but anybody in their life who doesn't have somebody in their life suffering, not just from depression, but other forms of mental illness, right? I mean, even for anxiety, Elizabeth, it just seems to me like you could just put the word anxiety as well in there and say, you know, and anxiety is another direction the brain goes, right? Yeah.
So do you think this would be great for, you know, because I'm thinking in our life, we don't know anybody that at least has shared directly that they have depression. Is this still something that you would recommend for, you know, maybe the older children, like 6 and up, to just listen and be aware of, so that they can also, you know, kind of understand that people go through that?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like just even having the knowledge and having it on the radar, gives somebody the capacity for being empathetic for somebody. When you put something like that on the radar, I mean, we educate our children, hopefully, to be aware of the needs of the world around them and love others well. So like, if knowledge can impart, help to cultivate a love for others, I would say
compassion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Compassion and really meeting people where they're at is, it's such a gift.
It keeps reeling through my brain. What if I had this book when Brianne was 20, and all of us, because we were pretty traumatized, the whole family was pretty traumatized by her experience, and of course went undiagnosed for quite a long time because we didn't know what was going on, right? And so something like that may have been a tool. Like, I just want to see it in people's hands, because it would have been pretty life-changing and giving me the words to talk about something that was very, very, very confusing.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah.
And that's empowering. It's empowering when you have words to be able to say, or even like, oh, like, it's great to have words that can help identify with what I'm feeling, or help me connect me to that part that I'm having trouble understanding about myself or somebody else. Like, how empowering. And it makes it that much less scary. Like, when you know about it, it doesn't just kind of come out of left field. You're like, oh, I read about this, or I know what this feels like.
Yeah, it's like, it should be on every family library, whether you have people with depression in your life or not, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right up there with Dr. Seuss.
There are other books in the series. One of them actually is on anxiety, which is also really, really great. There is another one by a local author. Her name is Jamie Letourneau, and she has one on shame. And she actually is an incredible illustrator, but she actually did illustrations in her book. But she talks all about shame. And I feel like shame and anxiety and depression kind of have this, they overlap a lot.
Oh, yeah. Get the trilogy.
Right. So check out the website. There's a ton of
Absolutely. And I'll link it here too. That would be great. Thank you so much again for being on. This has been a real treasure.
Oh yeah.
Thank you.
I wanted to just hug you while you were reading that.
I know. Like, can you be my mom?
Right.
How about Bonnie and the Artist?
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, God bless you, and thank you again. And we'll be in touch as soon as this is ready to roll. I'll send you the link.
Sounds good. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.